All right, depending on where you are, either an early edition or a late edition of the Padres Collective presented by our brand new partner, Prize Picks, that we'll tell you more about coming up. All right, we've got John Schaefer and Matt Devine and Kevin Acey with you for the next, let's say, the next 40 minutes or so, because Kevin is in Boston, Massachusetts, where the Padres will play tomorrow morning in the West, tomorrow afternoon in the East. And there is a lot to get into, obviously, off the 2-4 homestand to start the year. Also, new to the channel, if you want to see your comment on screen, if you want us to react to your questions, you can support the channel by clicking the dollar sign below the chat box. We'll get to your super chats later in the show, but if you want to get those in, if you want to make sure we get your comment, you can click that dollar sign below the chat box. Please subscribe. We are here for you year-round, weekly Padres content, and smash that like button for us as well. Off the top, Kevin, you are out east getting ready for this road trip that's about to begin for the Padres. Obviously not the homestand that Padres fans were hoping for. We'll see what happens beginning tomorrow in Boston. It's interesting because the Red Sox, like, you think the sky's falling out here. I can only imagine how far the sky has fallen in Boston off their 1-5 start, right?
Yeah, 1-5. I mean, besides Willy Abreu, has anyone really got going on offense? The Padres would love to have a guy who has three bombs. Two of their better pitchers, actually Crochet, his second time through. So three of their top starters, not great outings. I'm all about perspective, and that's good perspective.
Matt, what's it been like to watch this play out? I mean, we'll get into it, but obviously it hasn't been the start anyone is looking for. Hopefully things change on the road. It is, on one hand, it's six games. On the other hand, you're hoping for more than 2-4 out of the gates.
Don't hold back because I'm here, Matt. Don't hold back. I want to hear your unfiltered panic. Go.
No, of course. I got you. It was a pretty bad start, to be completely honest. Offensively, absolutely. I was very disappointed in kind of the offensive showing. You know, Ramon Laureano was great. Outside Ramon and Jackson, pretty disappointing. Everybody else, I don't really see how you have a home series with all the hype going in and some of your big guys didn't really show up. Is it the end of the world? Absolutely not. Is it going to be nice to, hey, maybe the boys, I mean, Kevin, you were on the plane. Go on the plane.
You're
not on the plane. So I apologize. I did not know that. But the boys are on the plane playing some poker, you know, have a couple Nicky Cervezas, right? Nick Castellanos brings the beers and, you know, play a little poker. Maybe they went to a big dinner, get the vibes going. You play Fenway, opening day for the Red Sox, home opener. You know, hey, get the bats going, right? It's early season, six games. I heard Ramon Laureano had a comment and he was like, what is it, the sixth game of the season, right? So yeah. Us fans live and die by every game. I need to work on that a little bit. That being said, I'm very excited for them to be on the road and hopefully get the bats going a little bit.
Let's get into the topics here tonight. And again, if you're new to the channel, please subscribe. We're here for you year-round Padres content. Smash that like button for us. And again, you can click the dollar sign below the chat box if you want us to get your comment on screen. But let's just get into it. A lot of discussion, Kevin, as you know better than I do, about Craig Stammen. Six games in, obviously there'll be a learning curve. He had never previously managed at any level before essentially the last 6 days. I know there was spring training, but anything that counted. And then, of course, you're taking over from a veteran manager, an experienced one that was very successful in regular seasons, either in San Diego or St. Louis. There's some similarities. There's some differences. What's it been like from your seat to watch this play out over the last week with Craig Stammen?
Well, from my seat, it's great because he's not afraid to answer any question. He's not afraid. I mean, he's humble yet incredibly confident, and those are two great traits. Now, from the standpoint of a manager, yeah, like, I don't know, were we surprised? Maybe even I was a little, like, I knew there was going to be some situations where Craig Stammen stuck with his pitchers because he was a pitcher and he wants them. Did I know that we were going to have two, arguably three situations in the first six games where we were, you know, able to question him? And that, you know, I would say, well, I always should say the perspective of all we're saying is, had he made a move, it might have worked out differently. Not it would have. Craig Stammen did not walk three batters in an inning. Craig Stammen did not give up an RBI single, but like the manager doesn't do that. But you know, yeah, there's a learning curve and it probably should have been something, and I'll take responsibility for this, is it probably should have been something that was, you know, forecast a little bit more. Do I think they're 2-4 because of Craig Stammen? I absolutely do not.
Couldn't agree more on that. I think, obviously, there's going to be a learning curve, right? Mike Schilt, you know, was a manager, won 90 games with every team. You know, Mike Schilt would win baseball games. There's no doubt about it. Craig Stammen, like you mentioned, Kevin, brand new manager. It's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be some mistakes. Obviously, what you were bringing up Friday night, Jerry Estrada walks three guys, did not kind of seem to lose his control a little bit. Next guy comes in, Wandy comes in, Kevin McCognell hits that ball, great at bat. Tip the cap, it happens, you lose a game, that sucks. We're 2-4, could be 3-3. Is it the end of the world? No. Hopefully we learn from that mistake. I could already tell he learned from the mistake a little bit because he said Mason Miller wasn't available on Friday night. And yesterday, Adrian Morejon walks a guy, and Mason Miller's coming in without for a four-out save. So I feel like Craig's going to learn. I loved your point at the end, though. If you believe Craig Stammen's the reason why this team's 2-4, you don't know baseball. I'm telling you right now. The reason why this team's 2-4 is they're ranked in the bottom five in almost every offensive category right now. It's as simple as that. Also, Walker Buehler and Germán Márquez. Germán Márquez, not a great start. Walker Buehler hung in there to an extent. There's reasons why this team is 2-4. Like I said before, it's not the end of the world. You can't blame it all on Craig. Do I think Craig could have made some better decisions? Absolutely. But if, you know, a couple of our guys hit a couple more homers, we wouldn't even have be having this discussion right now.
I want to say that I think Mike Schilt would have put Mason Miller in the first time. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
However, to be like to make sure that we have clarity on what the situation was, there was a game the next day on the day that he didn't put Mason Miller in the first time. And it was the second game of the season. Yesterday, Mason Miller hadn't pitched for 3 days and was guaranteed to have today off. Yeah. So it was a different situation. That said, Craig also acknowledged, well, we needed to win this game. Mike Schilt, if there was a fault, and it really wasn't a fault, but Mike Schilt wanted to win every game. I never seen a manager treat an MLB season like a NFL season as much as he did.
Exactly.
The one thing that I appreciate it. I talked to Kevin about this yesterday on, by the way, brand new radio show for me with Alan.
Congratulations.
I appreciate it on San Diego Sports 760. But on one hand, I was pretty appreciative of the sheer honesty of Craig Stammen yesterday in his post game commentary. It was like, I didn't even write the lineup card. I'm tired. I turned to Randy Knorr. I'm like, I need your help, which I appreciate. And we certainly would never hear that from most managers, let alone Mike Schilt. But then on the other hand, I wonder how that does play from a player's perspective. Like, hey, this is the guy steering the ship and he's uncertain. Like, you have to be steady. I just don't know. I feel like there's some things that they're going to be working through collectively before everyone kind of understands their role and the responsibility. A lot of the stuff Craig Stammen has said, I do appreciate, but I also feel like it's moving really quickly for him. Again, we'd all be in the same spot if we were in his shoes. He didn't hire himself, by the way. The Padres asked him to be in this situation. I just hope, I guess I'll look at it like this. I hope at the end of the year, we're not looking back and saying, you know what? Stammen really figured it out along the way, but it was a little too late.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 games in there that they just kind of cast aside, and not to put it all on him, but maybe they could have had a better chance of winning. And then you win 85 games. Like, you know what? They could have won 90 and they're on the outside.
I think that's fair. I want to say that Randy Knorr made sure to say that he's done this for every manager. Yep. There is a lot of input. Craig, though, did say from the start he was going to lean on guys, and the implication was lean on them more than other managers because he's never managed anything above the 7U Versailles baseball team, you know, in Ohio. So, like, kudos to him for that. But I think that's a fair point. I'm not saying it's happening, but I think it's a fair point that you would not want to look back and say a first time at any level manager, man, that guy was kicking ass by August. But, you know, they're 3 games out, and we can think of 5 or 6 games in April he may have affected. That's a fair question.
I love that. I also think Mike Schilt's manager right now, what are we, maybe 3-3? Maybe. This team isn't going – they're not 4-2, 5-1, or 6-0. There might be one game that swings. So Craig's learning. You know, everything's a lead if the team can hit. That's a simple. Hey, no one cares who's writing the card if you score 7 runs a game. So we'll touch on that a little later. But, you know, I think Craig's going to learn on the job. I do appreciate his honesty as a fan. I do know that some fans are going to take it as like, why are you telling us this? It seems a little weird. But I like it as someone that's really passionate about the team. I do think he cares. And that's a huge thing, right? I don't think he is someone that is going through the motions. I think he is obviously doing a. Everybody who started a new job, there's a little bit of a learning curve, right? There's a ramp period. So it's going to take a little bit. I do appreciate both your points, especially your point, John. You know, hopefully we don't look back and we're one or two games out and it's a bad decision that he made. But at the same time, we have a lot bigger problems than that right now, in my opinion.
I want to say this, like I loved, and a huge part of why I did this show was to be able to get your perspective, Matt. Like I sit in this ivory tower to some extent, right? And like my job is to be grounded. My job is to like, you know, have perspective, give context, not care, right? But I love to feel connected and to see the person behind the tweets, the person behind the email, be it the angry email or whatever. Not that you've ever sent me one. I'm just saying. I do like to know what fans are thinking. So then I would like to turn that around and say that then by doing this show, I think I have an opportunity to say, and this is one of my pet peeves, you can think whatever you want about Craig Stammen's honesty, but you can't complain when public figures, athletes, managers don't tell you things and then complain when they do tell you things. I'm sorry. We have ruined these people by like every time they get honest, there's a segment of people that are jumping on them. And it's like, do you ever expect them to say anything substantive? So just thank you, Matt, for giving me that opportunity to kind of go off a little bit.
That's Kev Dog right there, baby. I love when you cook. That was awesome.
Real quick on that point, I've always appreciated, I don't always agree with Manny Machado, but I appreciate the sheer honesty because there are very few athletes. And Kevin has been up close and personal for a lot of it. And I'm sure not all of it's pleasurable. I mean, I'm sure it isn't. He's a unique personality in professional sports, but there's not a lot like him anymore. So many are just willing to put on the facade and say the right thing. I think Jackson Merrill is a breath of fresh air. He's just him. He's young. He's not young on a field necessarily. He's better, you know, he's older than his age, so to speak, on the field, but he's some of him is a kid, which I appreciate. Manny's a grizzled vet, but he's willing to do things despite what people are going to say. I say things. Kevin can write things. Matt can say things on social media. He will trend on Twitter, Manny Machado, often. Most players don't in baseball. Of all sports, it's very regional. It's very localized. He will trend on Twitter. And honestly, I kind of appreciate it. I think in the monotony of 162, there's something to be said for like how uncomfortable sometimes he can make it. And I don't know. I kind of appreciate it from afar. I don't know if I would if I was in Kevin's shoes. If I was three feet away from him, I don't know if I would.
I love covering Manny. He is a pain in the ass. And by the way, he's absolutely full of it sometimes, and he knows he is. But then you're also spot on that then if you get past that, if you get past him wanting to make you uncomfortable, if you get past the kind of like cliches, Manny Machado is one of the most insightful players that I've ever covered. And I love the give and take with him, especially one-on-one. The press conference stuff or the gaggle stuff around his locker room can get kind of tiresome. Though they're fun too, because, you know, he can, whatever he does. But yeah, I agree. And I always applaud that. They don't have to be right. I'm not always right. So I absolutely love it. I didn't mean to take it this direction, but thank you.
No, I love it.
Let's go to the next topic because, again, we're going to try to be timely tonight. Kevin's in Boston. The Padres play tomorrow. Again, the Red Sox opener. And thank you guys for the Supers. Davey Sports, we've seen your Super. We'll get to it towards the end of the conversation. And thank you, N3WB117, for saying that he loves the show. And thank you guys. We appreciate you saying that. If you want to contribute or support, just click that dollar sign below the chat box. Now, I think from the fan base, we'd all agree the level of concern is sky high. Now, maybe it's been tempered a bit. I think if they lose yesterday, the sky has already fallen.
This would have been a spicy episode.
It would have been spicy. But, I mean, me and Kevin and Matt, we all know this. If you go 2-4 June 9th through the 13th, nobody cares. All 30 of the teams go 2-4, I would guess. Oh, when you get out of the gates 2-4, it's like starting a season 1-17. If you start 8-17, then go 1-17, it's much more excusable from the fan base than starting 1-17. So my level of concern, when I put it that way, is not overly high. It's not to say I'm overly optimistic, but I wouldn't say it's overly high. I don't love starting 2-4, but they're going to play 2-4 baseball along the way. But I wouldn't say it's overly high, but I understand people that are concerned. How do you guys feel about it?
I'll hop in real quick. I think the concern isn't the 2-4 record. I think the concern is a little bit of the same issues that we saw last year are popping up again, right? I'm not concerned that Jerry Estrada couldn't find the strike zone one night. It happens. Jerry Estrada is a good pitcher. When he's not facing the Dodgers, he's elite. So he's a special bullpen arm. I'm glad we have him. It happens. He didn't have his best stuff. What concerns me is, just to be completely transparent, it's the lack of slug. A video went viral on Twitter. They're not hitting mistakes. Logan Webb threw a bunch of cookies on Monday night, and they just didn't punish those mistakes. Weak flyouts to right field. That is what we need to do. If you want to be a team that wins a lot of baseball games, you have to punish mistakes, especially when you're facing a good pitcher like Logan Webb that doesn't throw a lot of mistakes. So when that happens in a 2-1 count with runners on first and third, you have to punish that. That was concerning. I think, you know, the lack of power from our, you know, Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts, and Tatis, who all make $110 million combined, a little concerning. Ramon Laureano looked great. Jackson Merrill is great. I think Jackson Merrill is going to have a MVP caliber season. I think this is going to be he's already had a coming out party, but this is going to be his year, in my opinion. So that's great, but there's real concerns there. I wasn't necessarily concerned with the starting pitching. I knew what we had with Walker. I don't think he pitched as bad as it looks. I think he got a little bit of tough luck. Herman Marquez, don't expect him to be starting a ton of games this year. And he got hit a little bit. My biggest concern is 100% the lineup. And it's the lack of, you know, extra base hits, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. And I think that, yeah, the concern, if there's a legitimate concern, right, it's that it was the issues you thought were going to be the issues, right? Back of the rotation, even you had that Nick Pivetta scare, but oh well, yeah, that's kind of like your Jeremiah Estrada argument. But the lack of slug, that's something you expect, you were worried about going in. It's there. It's six games, but the fact is it wasn't there last year. So now we're at 168 games. And so, absolutely. I don't know. It's too early for me. I have theories on it. People in the organization have theories on it. Let's wait till next episode. Let's see what they do here.
I love it.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say this, and somebody asked, and we'll get into lineup construction later. There's a day where Ramon Laureano sits, and people are making it out to be like, oh my gosh, they sat Ramon Laureano in game six of the National League Championship Series. In the grand scheme, I think, Kevin, you made this point with me yesterday. You're going to rotate through. You know, Ramon Laureano is certainly an everyday player. He's going to play a lion's share of the time, obviously, this year. Okay, he sits and you lose a game. Is that the difference necessarily between winning and losing? Obviously, nobody knows the answer to that. He's had a good week. Other players will have good weeks. Trust me, Nick Castellanos will have a good week. Gavin Sheets will have and so on and so forth. So I just feel like everything is under a microscope in the first week that likely isn't under the same microscope a month from today, would be my guess.
Here's the one that, and you didn't know, Craig Stammen, Randy Knorr, Steven Souza Jr., they didn't know Brandon Webb was going to have a really bad game, okay? Because that's really the one, right? Like they missed pitches against Landon Roop, who pitched like Cy Young. He really did. I know the Padres made guys look good, but that was, and then they faced the two best left-handed starters probably in the majors. They missed pitches, but
Brandon Webb won a Cy Young.
I'm getting all confused.
I know what you mean.
It's late, and I'm an idiot. Webb was off, and Matt, you nailed it. So that was troublesome, but they didn't know he was going to be that way. Now, hindsight, you go, Ramon Laureano would have made him, would have punished him, and they had him maybe only one inning. They had him on the ropes, but they had him on the ropes, man, for four innings. Mm-hmm. And maybe Ramon Laureano does make the difference in that game, but that's not the kind where you can question him like we can't a pitching change or something obvious, because the fact is he's a right-handed hitter. They have three right-handed hitters on the bench. Two of them also play the outfield, Andujar and Castellanos. They're veterans. You've got to get them to play. Like, you've got to rotate guys through. There was a lot of factors that went into that. But, it just wasn't a big deal. But, yeah, hindsight, I think maybe they do win that game if Laureano plays.
Potentially.
I see.
What's on a scale of 1 to 10, the concern, I would not – I mean, I'll start it off
I'm
by
gonna,
saying
– go ahead.
Yeah, I would. I'm not going to go high. I'm going to say, maybe even this is high. I'd say four, as in it's not on the scale of overly concerning. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. There's some things in there that I don't love. The one game where the defense looked like it was their first time playing baseball, you know, and again, you're facing, it's hard because the sample sizes in baseball do matter. And to pretend like everything is determined on six games is completely, it's not fair. It's not reasonable. They've played two opponents, you know, out of 29 that they're going to play, and the pitching they faced will not be like this all year. But yeah, I can't be overly, maybe four is too high, but I wouldn't go higher than four in terms of my level of concern with the club overall.
Yeah, I'll say around four. You know, I am concerned that, you know, a couple of these guys, we need our stars. This team will only go as far as Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado, you know, produce number-wise. And I know Manny always says, you know, back of my baseball card, you know, all this stuff. He's had a 630 OPS since August 1st. Tatis, when I see him at the plate, I hate to say it, when I watched him in the Dominican play in the World Baseball Classic, it looked like he was trying to hit a home run and really trying to punish balls. When I see him play for the San Diego Padres, it looks a little bit different. And I know he's facing major league pitching compared to some of the, you know, Czechoslovakian engineers that were pitching for, you know, the Czech Republic or whatever, the guy that struck out Shohei. That being said, I want to see Tatis punish baseballs. That's why he gets paid the big bucks. Like, I want to see our middle of our lineup punish. Like, I don't like seeing Xander Bogaerts. I know we brought it up earlier. Xander, you're making $25 million a year. When you get a cookie, you gotta hit it hard, man. So that is concerning to me, to be completely honest, from a fan perspective.
I understand. I'm going to quote Ramon Laureano. I could go anywhere from one to zero. I have no idea what he meant when he said he could hit anywhere from one to zero.
But like
it was such a great quote, and it got across what he said. Now, I want to say, I can go anywhere from one to zero. A week from now, I could be at an eight. So we'll see how it plays out. But that's my whole thing, right? Like, is it's six games. That's why I love covering baseball. I love the baseball season. It's a novel. Every game is a page. And I just can't wait for the next page, especially when we're this early in the season.
All right. Completely agree. Before we get to our next topic, we'll talk more about the lineup construction we've seen so far from Craig Stammen and Randy Knorr over the first six games. Again, if you're here, subscribe, year-round content for Padres fans. You can smash that like button for us. We'll get to your super chats at the end of our conversation as well. We want to remind you about our brand new partner here on the Padres Collective, our friends over at Prize Picks. It couldn't be simpler or easier to play and win. You pick more or less on player stats, and you can win, and you can win big. In fact, I've got a lineup for tomorrow, guys, okay, over at Prize Picks, and I want to get your 2 cents. And by the way, before I give you the lineup, I do want to remind you that if you download the Prize Picks apps today and use code HMA to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup, that's what you're getting. So download the Prize Picks app today, use code HMA, get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code HMA to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. And you can click that link in the description down below. So here's what I have for tomorrow. I'm on the Prize Picks app. If you don't have it, make sure to check it out. This is probably hard to see, so I'll read it to you. So this is a 3-pick power play, $10 to pay 110. All right, so 11 to 1 odds on this. And it's just three plays. I've got Sonny Gray allowing more than 2.5 runs, which, again, I'm just trying to feed some of the mojo. Padres trying to spoil opening day for the Red Sox. I've got Jackson. Now, this is where it gets a little tricky, although Merrill has homered. I've got Merrill homering tomorrow. Why not? It's Fenway, right? Short porches everywhere, or short, you know, dimensions. And then I got Tatis with an RBI because I just feel like they could use it. So I don't feel like that's that unreasonable. Tatis needs an RBI. Merrill's got a homer at Fenway. And Sonny Gray's got a lot of 3 runs. And that pays $110 at Prize Picks. What do you guys think?
I'll be riding. I mean, I love it. Sonny with a chance of meatballs tomorrow is what I'm thinking, right? I need – I'm hoping at least. I love the Merrill home run pick. I remember when we played them 2 years ago, 2024. It was right after, I think, the All-Star break or right before the All-Star break. Merrill went yard. I think he hit it to center field. I was back in San Diego watching it with some friends. And then he went on that absolute heater that he went on his rookie year. That was a really, there's a big gift to you on Twitter. You know, if you know the DSG, we're on Twitter a little too much, but him doing, I think it's like the nay-nay with one of the players. It might've been with Profar, someone after he hit the home run, but it shows Boston in the gift. So I'm like, we only play Boston a few times. I love that pick, John. And then Tatis shows up in big games. Opening day, home opener for the Boston Red Sox. Tatis is going to show up. Day game against the Nationals in July? I don't know. Maybe he takes a couple ABs off. But a big game like that, it's going to be packed out Fenway Park. I think I could totally see him hitting an RBI.
Yeah, Merrill was 7-for-14, two doubles and two homers in the series here. He grew up in Baltimore as a huge Red Sox fan. Yeah, Dustin Pedroia was his favorite player. His mom was in center field when he hit that ball. It was a pretty special series here. It's always special here, but that was pretty special for that kid. And then to cover it and see what he was doing at that time. So, yeah. And if they don't score, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to do it all off grade. What'd you say, two and a half? Score three runs tomorrow? I mean, for goodness sake. Yeah. Like, this is where I said my concern level could be up at an 8 here in a week or two if they don't start scoring more than 2.5 runs a game.
No doubt. Prize Picks, by the way, guys, available right here in California. By the way, you can find us on Prize Picks. I'm at John Schaefer. You can follow along with our plays. They've got a ton of great features, including early payouts. And if you're just missing that fantasy feeling between drafts, you can play along with Prize Picks. Make sure to use, again, the promo code HMA to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Click that link in the description down below. All right, let's continue on. We're going to get to these super chats. Just saw one roll in from, Isil Dursabane. We'll get to him at the end of the conversation, but let's continue on here with today's show on the collective, the lineup, which is always the biggest point of contention. I spent the full second half of the year talking lineups with Mike Schilt last year because there was all this bunting and small ball and they weren't scoring runs at a good clip. Now we've already seen different lineups with lefties and righties, which makes sense, but now they've already thrown that to the wayside with Fernando Tatis Jr. leading off just yesterday. You guys can take this anywhere you want. I think some would tell you it's overrated. Some would tell you it's underrated. The lineup obviously is a focus because they haven't scored. Prior to yesterday, they just had not scored. What have you seen? What do you want to see moving forward?
Kevin, I can let you go.
Craig's not afraid to change, is he? Yesterday, I went back and read a story I wrote before spring training where I asked him about lineup construction, given the questions last year. And I tend to think that it's overrated. But my lead to that story, in which Craig said, no, he's going to change the lineup as it needs to be changed. But my lead in that story was lineups aren't important until they are. Right? Where a guy hits, not important until it is. When Luis Arraez is batting second all year, suddenly that's freaking important, man. I don't know that the lineups had anything to do here. Like, Tatis is great in the leadoff spot. The bottom of the order is getting on. They did yesterday. He had that booming 50-mile-an-hour single back to the left side of the infield, scored a run. I mean, just like you draw it up. So, that lineup yesterday, they had two unearned runs. They had no RBIs, and they were leading 2-0. They could easily have won that game 2-1 without an RBI. So before we get all jacked about that, you know, about that lineup, let's remember that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the lineup construction is definitely something that it's fun. It's fun to chat about, right? Because everybody likes to play, you know, Twitter manager or bench man, or, you know, at home on the couch. If I was Craig Stamen, I'd put this or that. I think Ramon Laureano should be in the top four in the lineup. And I think that is, I'll be honest, I said this before the season, I tweeted it and I got a lot of grief. And I said, I genuinely think since he's come over to our team, Ramon Laureano is a top three hitter on our baseball team. If statistically speaking, since he's been traded from the Orioles to the Padres last year, half season or a little bit less than half a season. And the first six games of this season, that's a guy I want to see up way more than batting seventh in the lineup. I don't understand why he's not getting more at bats. I think baseball is, to an extent, pretty simple. You have your best players get the most at bats. So if you want Tatis batting first, I love it. Go for it. But hey, Merrill, you could put Ramon batting second. You could put Merrill batting second. If you want to do some switches, I just want to see Ramon Laureano get more at bats. Because I don't think his week is fluke. Do I think he's going to end the season with a 1,200 OPS? Probably not. But can I see him having an 850 OPS? I can. I'm not joking. I think he's that good. I think
he's a good player.
Great. He was great with Oakland. Obviously had some issues. Got popped for, some performance-enhancing stuff. Has bounced back. Didn't do that great forget where he was in the middle. And then he was with the Braves, started bounce back a little bit. Orioles had a great half of the season. I think he's a great player. And I also think he's a hungry player. I think we need more guys that, and Kevin, you mentioned this multiple times on the show. Ramon Laureano is the most competitive guy next to Jackson Merrill. Those are the two dudes. So I want the two most competitive guys that can also hit at the front of the lineup.
I do wonder, what do you think they're going to do here with, like, are you just going to slot Tatis in at leadoff eventually? And, yeah, you could move around the rest of the lineup depending on whether it's a left-handed or right-handed starter, but are you just going to slide Tatis in somewhere and say, hey, you know when you get to the park, this is where you are? And I don't know if leadoff is the right spot. I'm not saying it's leadoff, but does he just settle it? He's been a very good leadoff hitter in his career. I think if you look at his career numbers, now his career is an interesting one, because a lot of it is the first 3 years, as we've talked about, and not the next 3 years. But, I mean, what do you think, Kevin? Do you think they're leaning towards slotting him into a spot or leaning into matchups? Again, I think they've got a platoon-heavy roster, if that makes sense. Like, again, they have, you know, position players that should be starting against left-handed starters, and they have position players that should start against right-handed starters. That is modern baseball, obviously. With Tatis, though, he's just playing. So would you just play him at the top of the lineup, or would you move him around depending on who's starting?
I think that they're going to put him atop of the lineup in spite of what they think, which is they'd like to have him in better RBI situations, but he produces at the top. Now, here's what you need to wonder. And I talked to him in the spring, and, you know, you get talking to Tatis a little bit, and he can be a really, really insightful guy and a good quote. And he said, yeah, if you're going to bat me leadoff, have a real lineup at the bottom. So yep. You have your 7, 8, 9 hitters not producing, or let's go 6, 7, 8, 9 hitters not producing. Eventually you're wasting Tatis there. And what happens when Tatis is wasted? Then he kind of, and he's working on it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But he kind of works again, becomes his own worst enemy. Okay. Mm. And then maybe he's hitting solo homers. And like, so I don't know. I think they're going to move him around. And I do think, look, I think Craig is the kind of manager who will play the hot hand. And that could be because I liked Laureano in the two last year. Especially like it was August, it was late August. I think Craig is the kind of guy, the manager who could put Laureano up there, even though he knows he's got Merrill, Machado, Bogarts. He's got to fit those guys in somewhere. But as long as Laureano's hot, I could see him moving Laureano up to the two. Now he doesn't get hot, or he's not hot for a while, moves him down. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see Laureano down in the 7, 8, 9. Not when Bogarts isn't hitting. I just don't think that's going to happen.
So I guess that was going to be my question for you, Kevin, and John, you could weigh in too. Is there a inherent, hey, this guy gets paid a lot of money, so we can't move him down in the lineup? Because I do see that a little bit with some of our bigger stars. You know, one of our biggest stars has had a 630 OPS since August 1st, and he's no matter what, he's batting third or fourth.
You ain't moving, man. Manny could go over the next 600.
All I'm saying, and I don't think he's going to move down, but maybe sometimes bat fifth, or Xander Bogaerts bat seventh or eighth, and Jake Cronenworth bat ninth. Like, just because you get paid a lot of money, I want the good guys up. I want the guys that give us the best chance to win having more at-bats or in more favorable positions. So if Tatis is better when he bats third or fourth, never move him from that.
A little bit of a manager's or a lot of a manager's job is managing egos and managing humans, right?
Yeah.
Managing prideful guys. And I'm not going to name any names, but I'm going to say that there are guys on this team now, there's guys in the past couple years where the manager didn't move them because of how that guy was going to react, and that manager felt that, and I'm going back now two managers before Craig, because it's too early with Craig. That manager felt that the payoff or the penalty would have been worse for the team with that guy sulking in the 6 or the 5 than that guy batting in the 2 or the 3 or the 4. And that's the reality of managing young, incredibly talented, incredibly prideful, incredibly rich players, like human beings, I should say. Yeah. And so that's just as, and any manager will tell you, far more important than the X's and O's.
And real quick on that, real quick, and we're all on the same page here.
Yeah.
This is the danger of money and contracts, because you're digging yourself sometimes like deeper into holes. It's like, well, we paid Xander, therefore it needs to be, I'll just use Xander as the example, and it's not based on anything that we've seen so far this year, obviously, but let's just go down the path. Well, we paid him, so we're going to play him. And by playing him, we're actually hurting ourselves, but there's no other option other than playing him, and we're not going to move him down the lineup because everyone knows he's making $280 million over these 11 years. The same thing with prospects. A 19th rounder doesn't work. He doesn't get a second, third chance. Sure. Ethan Salas, and there's a reason. Now, Ethan Salas can be a good player, hopefully. But, of course, he can get fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth opportunity. The organization is invested in him. It starts at the very top of the organization with their front office. There's all, you know, so I just feel like that's very baseball, that from the time you're a prospect or not one to all the way through you get paid. And then this idea of even getting rid of a player and saying, well, let's get rid of a player and let's attach prospects to him. To it's like you've already signed a bad contract and now you're going to get rid of some of your future to get rid of the bad contract that you signed. There's just a very baseball nuanced part of it that sometimes plays out.
And I don't want to make sure I go back, because you're right, and I don't want to take away from your point, but I want to make sure I go back. That doesn't mean that the managers of the Padres have not also made some tough decisions where they've had to do it. And I'm saying, look, that's a part of their job. That is a part of Craig Stammen's job. If we get X number of games down the road with player X, to say, and I'm on record saying I think that's why Craig was hired, because he can and will do it. That's his job to figure out how to manage the egos.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with both your guys' points. I think, you know, lineup construction's one thing. Do I think it's going to be do I think if we had different lineups, we would have won some of those games this week? Probably not, honestly. I think it really comes down to, are the guys hitting? Jake Cronenworth, for example, not hitting at all this week. He was 4-for-24. I don't know if he would have been, you know, 8-for-24 with two homers if he batted in the eight spot. I think sometimes, you know, you have a bad week. So it happens. I do like that Craig is willing to move it around. I'm curious to see if he figures one out, and maybe one works and one doesn't throughout the season, where he's like, hey, lefties, just we lead off with Ramon or something like that. I also think Merrill as a leadoff guy could be pretty interesting one. I don't know if we've ever tried that, but that dude hits the ball hard and he gets on bit. He doesn't walk enough, which I kind of get that. But yeah, we'll see. It's like we said, six games into the season, I feel like our conversations on this are going to change a lot.
All right, let's move on to a final topic here for 5 minutes, and then let's get to some of these super chats for five or so minutes as well. If you want to have us respond to one of your comments on screen, you can click the dollar sign below the chat box, and we'll make sure to get to it. We see those super chats that are in there, so we'll get to them coming up in about 5 minutes. Also, subscribe, year-round coverage for you if you're a Padres fan, and smash that like button for us as well. I would say this when it comes to a series preview, and I don't know a lot about the Red Sox, but I would say this. Xander going to Boston, to me, remains interesting. Because correct me if I'm wrong, the last time he was there, he was hurt. And it's like you have two players, the one that is seen through the Red Sox fans' eyes and the one that is seen through the Padres fans' eyes. And they are completely different, opposite side of a spectrum player. Two-time world champions to someone that scuffled at the plate for 3+ years and is overpaid in San Diego, right? It's an interesting dichotomy. I'm fascinated by Xander going back home, so to speak. And also about, I said this heading into the Giants series, the Giants are going to be desperate. You go 0-3 at home, you score one run, you're playing on Netflix, you have all these off days. They just want to get out of Dodge, and they won the series. I feel like the Red Sox going home are desperate as hell, and we'll see how that plays out over the next 3 days.
If you're interested in more than just Xander sucks, I posted a story about Xander going back. I thought his quotes were fantastic. I happen to be fascinated by the fact that Xander Bogaerts was on a Hall of Fame track before he started playing for the Padres, and now he's just not. So I'm fascinated by that. He's a shell, basically, of himself. Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. And it'll be, you know, look, when we were here last time, like that was a nice moment. Luis Arraez played here 2 years, is a joyful, wonderful human being. They did a nice video tribute. People clapped for him. When Xander came back here, it was legit standing O. I talked to Rafael Devers this week. He said Xander Bogaerts was an historic Red Sox. And he was. Like, take a look at the numbers.
Yeah, you talk to any Red Sox fans. I have a couple of buddies up here in the Bay and some buddies from back home that are big Red Sox fans, and their love for Xander is real, man. he, in a sense, is kind of like, it might be a hot take, but kind of how the Padres look at Tatis for a little bit, right? Where it's like, if Tatis one day goes to another team, they're going to look and it's like, hey, but Xander actually won with them. You know, we haven't won any World Series. Like Xander, 2013 rookie year, comes up, wins a World Series, huge part of that 2018 team, which was just a great baseball team. If you look at it, one of the best baseball teams of my lifetime. So Xander Bogaerts is a beloved figure in Boston. I think he's going to have a good series. I think Xander, he's overpaid, but at the same time, I think he cares. And I like, of course you care with $25 million, but I really do think, and Kevin, I liked your piece today too. I really do think he cares. And I really do think he wants to win. And I think he wants to do his best to prove that he's worth, you know, even some of the money that we're paying him. Right. So I'm excited for him to come back. And I think he's going to get a nice ovation and hopefully we get two or three wins.
You know, another interesting part of that story, Xander Bogaerts came here in 2023. He barely knew the Padres existed until Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado were playing for him. He was blown away to find out that 14,000 people used to show up for Tuesday games. He go, what? There wasn't always sellouts? Like, he basically sees the Padres and the Red Sox in some ways as the same, right? Like, the fans expect a lot of them. They show up. They're loud. It's a big deal in town. And I'm like, Xander. I mean, it's funny. Like, and that, to me, the interesting part, if you're a Padres fan, is like, look how far this team has come. Like, just look how far this team has come.
How about yesterday? I'm watching. Yeah, they're 1-4. I'm thinking, well, it's Wednesday. It's by San Diego standards, it wasn't perfect. It was only perfect. Like maybe people stay away for a day. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Place is packed. I mean, it's incredible. I've made this point in general. This is a different point. I mean, first of all, San Diego Padres fans have certainly become among the best in the sport. Like that to me is inarguable. Plus, I think the overall just the way that people are dialed in on Padres baseball 365 has completely changed. In other markets, including like Philadelphia, they turn their attention to the Eagles. They're knowledgeable sports
fans. Well, they can.
But they're turning their attention, or in New York, they're turning their attention to something else. In San Diego, people aren't necessarily turning their attention. It's become, honestly, a unicorn baseball market. We've made this point before. It's the only market in the country that only has a baseball team among the big four. And it's a remarkable market right now. So maybe that's why they're going to get $3 or $4 billion for this franchise.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I decided to go there, but maybe
I love it. No, John,
I remember going to a game in 2017 when the Phillies were in San Diego. I think Rhys Hoskins hit 2 home runs. There were 12,000 people there, and 8,000 of them were wearing red.
Yeah. When I was in college, I could buy a ticket. Don't get me in trouble for this, but I would buy a ticket for left field upper bleachers, and I'd be three rows back behind home plate by the third inning, watching Ryan Schimpf. You know, he's a real estate agent now. So you're like, oh man, like this is it's a different team. It's fun. I don't know if Padres Collective would have as many people in the chat back in 2017, but
we talked prospects back then.
Chargers Collective. Chargers Collective would be packed.
Pedroia. No, I do think though we have to remind ourselves that sometimes, and myself as a fan too, it's easy to get spoiled to an extent, right? Where I'm complaining about, you know, a future Hall of Famer and Manny Machado. When you really think about that, I know for a fact that when I have kids, I'm going to talk to my kids and be like, man, you don't realize how awesome those days were with Tatis, Manny, Merrill, Crone. Like, and I know Crone, it's like kind of funny, but like he had one of the biggest hits of my lifetime, at least. And it's like, he's been, we talked about it in our podcast, and obviously he had a tough start to the year so far, but Cronenworth's been on the team for like 6 years. He's a core piece. Like when we talk about these teams, hopefully we get a ring with this squad, but he is a core piece of probably the best Padres teams of my lifetime. So, you know, we got to remind ourselves that time. And like you said, John, and I'll wrap it up quick, but it really is impressive to see how into baseball San Diego is and how much of an event it's become to be a Padres fan and go to Padres games. I have friends up here who go and visit, San Diego. Oh, I'm going with my girlfriend this weekend. Me and Mike have season tickets. I'll give them the tickets. They'll send me a message. Dude, I didn't expect it to be as fun as that was. Like, it's a Tuesday night. And, like, the Giants do a good job, and Oracle Park is beautiful.
Yep.
But it's not the same. It's It is crazy every single night down in Petco Park. So shout out the team and shout out the Padres organization.
Let's get to some of these comments that rolled in earlier. And we do appreciate the super chats. You can click that dollar sign below the chat box. And also please subscribe. Year-round content for you and smash the like button for us. This is the Padres Collective presented by Prize Picks. This rolled in earlier, Kevin, if you had any insight. This is obviously a long-term topic of conversation, the ownership situation obviously playing out with the Padres. Davey Sports 98, thank you for the super. He says, can you talk about Tom Gore's potential as an owner at the end, I guess, of our conversation here tonight? I want to say he also has been asking, because Tom Gore owns 27% of the Chargers, is there any scenario where the rest of the ownership group of the Chargers would take on any of the ownership of the Padres if he was the winning bidder?
Have heard absolutely nothing about that. Do not think that that is in the realm of possibility. And you and I were talking about this the other day on the radio, that I think that John Seidler's only real chance for a lasting legacy is, who does he sell this team to? Through no fault of his own, right? And, you know, and where I would say that he can do his legacy and San Diego a favor by picking the right owner. Can you imagine the epic failure to sell to a group that included Dean Spanos? Like, I happen to really like John Spanos, and I would have to say to him that might be one of the dumbest things that I have ever seen in my life. Like, I'll defend a businessman, and I'll even defend some things that Dean Spanos ultimately did, but that man deserves to be a pariah in this town to the end of time. I see no scenario whatsoever. Now, hey, what a flex by Dean Spanos that would be, though. That would be some sick stuff.
Yeah, if you know me at all, I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy. I feel like I'm friends with, you know, it's hard for me to really not like someone. And Dean Spanos is maybe, you know, off the top of my head, one of three people I really, just even the name angers me, to be completely honest.
Would you be a Padres fan still?
If they left?
No, if Dean Spanos owned them.
If they stayed in San Diego, yes, but I wouldn't be happy. I mean, Dean Spanos is that could be an entire episode. But, you know, the thing with ownership, and I loved your point right now, Kev, where you were saying, you know, lasting legacy. So when you hear the word Seidler, right? When I hear the word Seidler, I think Peter. And I think what amazing things he did for the community, for the Padres, for the city of San Diego. If you're John Seidler and the rumors are you were going to sell this inherited asset for $3.2 to $3.5 billion. Billion. You got to have in your mind, do I want to put my brother's legacy, you know, do I want to be the guy? Because when I hear Seidler right now, I think Peter. But if you sell it to the wrong guy and someone comes in and just absolutely nukes his team just because you get an extra $2.2 billion, that Seidler name's not going to be remembered as well as it would if he sells it to the right guy. So, and I think John, like you mentioned, I think John cares. And I know it's business, but billions of dollars, man, come on. Hey, they're going to be able to, you know, order their DoorDash no matter what and not have to check their credit card statement, right? With the $3.5 billion. They're going to be good.
So I do like how you said, what's another $0.2 billion? You know what that is, Matt? It's $200 million.
I do know. Accounting major. I don't know if I deserve the degree. Let's get to
a couple more here. This super that rolled in earlier says, Kevin, will we know who the buyer of the team is sometime this month? Who are you hearing it is? I mean, obviously, we don't know that part of it, but is this month still a possibility?
Yeah, this month is still a possibility. Yes. If all not, right. You know, a probability. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So we're getting closer. So we could have an answer on this within the next handful of weeks. Then this just rolled in from Jonathan. Appreciate you, man. He says, John Seidler's legacy can be approving Merrill's extension, which obviously played out. John's under his watch, and Kevin knows about. I mean, they did some things. I mean, the Michael King deal, a series of 1-year deals, but is significant potentially. Obviously, the Merrill extension is arguably as important as any move the Padres have recently made. So it's not like it's been some abject failure. That's not the point. I don't think it's been Peter's run, but it, you know, it's been successful.
You spent, when I say, look, I spend a lot of time defending John because he stepped up for his family and he stepped up for his brother's legacy. And he's a really nice man, and not everybody, like him taking, him doing the, taking over the chairmanship and becoming a quasi public figure would be like if I had stage fright and I decided that I was going to come on this podcast and be thinking about the, you know, 1,000 people that are listening. Like John Seidler stepped up. I spend a lot of time trying to make sure that people understand this is a good man with good intentions, but he's been the owner for a year. Jackson Merrill signed a team friendly contract. I mean, I'm not trying to say that that wasn't a big deal, but like he's not Peter. Like, you know, he's not Peter. Like, what you want in your next owner is someone with Peter's vision, passion, and actual real money. That's what you want in an owner.
Couldn't agree more, Kevin. And I do like how, you know, I do think from the fans' perspective, right, we just see these names. We don't know these people. You get to chat with these people. So I do kind of on a reverse Uno card, I do enjoy hearing your perspective. You're like, hey, this is a nice guy. I've never met this guy, right? I don't know these people. So it's cool to, I honestly enjoy doing this podcast for a lot of reasons, but it is really fun to hear, you know, the other side, right? Where it's like, when I'm just watching these guys, you know, 3 hours a day or seeing a tweet that, you know, they're selling to this guy or this guy, you know, it's cool to hear. I do believe they're going to sell it to a good owner. And I truly believe, maybe it's an optimistic take. I think it's going to be a great thing. Because Kev, you said it at the end, John Seidler, the Seidler family did great things for the San Diego Padres. But if you want to play with the big dogs, you got to have big dog checkbooks. And right now they don't. And they're going to get paid a lot of money, which is great. But bring in someone with the big dog checkbook and sign that, because we need some starting pitching next year. I want to see Terry Stewart on opening day 2027, but not pitching for the Tigers. I want to see him pitching for the San Diego Padres.
Let's put a bow on it before the clock strikes midnight in Boston, where the Padres will play in a mere handful of hours. Kevin, before we get out of here, you've been doing a lot of writing, obviously, and traveling. Anything you want to promote as you get ready for this opener in Boston tomorrow?
Nope, just that I do this pretty much every day, and you know, subscribe to my email, the Padres Daily. It's free. It's free.
I love free stuff. So subscribe to Kevin's email is all I'm going to say. And then, yeah, if you like our stuff, me and Mike did a little, my brother did a podcast a little earlier. But yeah, no, excited for this series. I think it's going to be great. You know, hopefully we take two or three and we bounce back and we take on the Pirates on Tuesday.
If you like this content, Kevin will join me tomorrow. I don't know if he realizes yet, on Schaefer and Sliwa at some point in the afternoon after game one of the series. So Kevin will be on with me on the radio at some point tomorrow afternoon. Catch us on 760. We're on YouTube as well. Guys, we appreciate you. We'll be back next week. Padres trying to turn the tides here on the road, taking on the Red Sox and the Pirates. Again, subscribe, smash the like button, and appreciate those that have been here with the super chats. And you can always do the super thanks as well if you are here on replay. For Kevin Acey and Matt Devine, my name is John Schaefer, and this has been the Padres Collective presented by PrizePicks. See you next week, guys. Get some sleep.